This is Alex Filenko at Layton. I'm very excited to have this conversation with you guys. I'm with Jonathan Irvin and Maggie Hsu today. I'm very happy to have them on this podcast. Today we are going to discuss about blockchain. So before we start, I think what would be good to do is you guys know who you're talking to, right? So my name is Alex Filenko. I'll be the moderator at during this little hour of podcast. And I'm basically the head of growth and partnership at Layton Canada. I'm based out of Toronto, and I've been working at Layton for a bit more than 2 years now. And I am also with Jonathan Irvin, whom I started to work with since I started Layton. John.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, I'm just a little bit about me. I'm a software engineer. I've got a computer science degree as well as electronics engineering and computer control. So I've got the software and hardware side of things. Much prefer the hardware side. I'm not a big fan of software development, but, you know, I've written some code in the past. So I'm currently teaching myself Python. My role here is also going to start learning blockchain development too. So I'm going to start doing that in the next couple of months. My role at Layton, I'm a technical director here. Primarily, I've been doing SHRED and government grants for, Jesus, I think over 13 years now. So that's I bring a technical aspect to working with clients. And right now, my biggest focus is, and geeking out is blockchain technology, which I'm super happy that we're able to geek out with Maggie here today too.
Awesome. Maggie, give us your honor.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. Very pleased to be here. And just to add to what John is saying, he is an amazing partner. So we are a client of Layton's, and John is so good to work with. Very reliable, always there. So, yeah, I just want to give a shout out to that. A little about myself. So, yeah, I've been in the blockchain space since 2016. My background is actually in legal, so I used to be a business lawyer. And then when I learned about, you know, came across the concept of smart contract and Ethereum, my mind just blew up. You know, if two people can enter into an agreement and you don't need lawyers or bankers or even bank accounts for those people to reach their agreement, that's for a pretty cool future. Anyway, so yeah, I've been geeking out in the industry since 2016, and I'm currently working on a NFT project. So that's a little about myself.
Wow, exciting, Maggie. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the little shout out. I really appreciate that as the head of growth. It's always good to have some publicity. So yeah, why are we discussing blockchain today? So I must say, I myself a little bit of a newbie of blockchain, and the first time I really came across understanding what is blockchain is when I met John, when we started to working and developing the Toronto office 2 years ago. The reason why we, you know, had a little bit of focus around blockchain, it's because Layton offers, you know, the SHRED tax credit RD services, and SHRED is around technical uncertainty, right? So what we found out and what John kind of shared to me, and to my understanding, blockchain was a very good space to explore when it comes to SHRED, because of the many, you know, many applications we could find, but also it's, even though it's been there for quite some time, it's still like, you know, something it still need to be explored, right? It's not fully conquered. So one thing that, you know, as I came across, there's a lot of definition around blockchain. Some of them are accurate or less accurate. What I wanted to start with today is having two pros giving us a definition of blockchain. How do you define blockchain? And we can start off with that, maybe. Maggie.
All right. Well, to me, blockchain, in the simplest term, is just a record. It's just a record of transactions. And that record is maintained by a lot of people globally. And so, you know, if one person is trying to change the record, everyone else is saying, actually, you can't do that because we also have a copy of the record. And if you change it, and it doesn't match with the record we have, well, we're not going to agree to you. So that's why when you hear, you know, terms like immutability when you hear terms like, you know, permanence, it just means that the information on a blockchain, whatever information that is, it can be a transaction information, it can be recording of something else, it's just a digital record. So I think the simplest way to think about it is it's a record that a lot of people around the world will maintain. And then we can use that record in many different industries. For example, in finance, which is the easiest industry for this record to be integrated into, well, no, you know, if one person is borrowing money from someone else, okay, we have a record of that. That person has borrowed this much. Or if that person, you know, is now repaying it, well, now that person has a good credit score and everything is being stored on the record. But if you look at other spaces, you know, art, fashion, music, all these other industries are now getting disrupted in a way because now there's a new way to store all these information, right? Like between a music label and a music producer and a DJ, now there's a way to store all these information. And so for IP rights or a lot of the distribution rights, now there's a record for it. So that's just a simple example of how we can now use this technology and how it can really change how we operate in many different industries.
Yeah.
you pretty much covered it, but I guess the way I can approach it, I can approach it from a different perspective. If you think about it like a decentralized distributed ledger, that's something that's there. And just to give you guys an example, back in the day when blockchain was just in its infancy and people thought that it was anonymous and you couldn't, it couldn't be traced, there were these, let's say, black market kind of websites that you could go to and buy. But it's just to kind of go off what Maggie's saying, everything is recorded on the blockchain. So even if a transaction between someone you think is anonymous, it can be traced back to you. It can be traced back to your wallet. And another good example of where blockchain is going to be helping to revolutionize is traceability for any kind of even food that you buy or clothing that you buy. You can trace it all the way back to the cotton farm that the cotton came from, if you wanted to, or the fish, and making sure that it's actually lobster or it's actually crab that you're actually getting. So there's a lot of benefits to blockchain and that we can bring to the table. So,
so yeah. John, actually, just to touch on that point, traceability. Yeah. So there's another term for it, which is authenticity, right? Like especially, all these terms will work, but like especially, yeah. Let's say in a world of luxury fashion, having that traceability or authenticity is at the core of that industry. And this is where we're seeing, for example, for diamond rings, now people care about, you know, is it blood diamond coming out of Africa or is it like legit diamond business? And every step of the way you can trace it, there's a lot of technologies along with blockchain that can help us with tracing it. For example, Internet of Things, like having a little chip inside, you know, a diamond or like a expensive bag or something will help us say, okay, this bag has moved from this manufacturer into this distributor. Now there's a whole supply chain aspect of it. And so, yeah, like just kind of building on the point that John was touching on, like that traceability is such a huge and integral part of a lot of the, you know, luxury fashion, food, a lot of these industries. And blockchain is here to help facilitate that.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially when it comes to luxury fashion, because nowadays it's so easy to make a fake of something, like a fake t-shirt or a fake bag and things like that. So having the blockchain technology, it all registered on a digital ledger that you can check it and verify the authenticity. It's going to be great. It's going to be game changing for many industries.
It's funny because we are just few minutes in the conversation. I already learned a new application of it. I have never seen of. This is amazing. I'm already having a blast.
So Alex, like your shoes, I know you're a big collector of shoes. Now with blockchain technology, you'll be able to authenticate those shoes and make sure that they're real.
Yeah, that's great. That is great. And now I have like one question is coming to mind is adoption. Mm. So far, what is the adoption or in this process? Like maybe right now we are in the fashion industry, for instance. What is the percentage if we can have one, the level of adoption and you think it is, and what maybe could increase down the line, help this adoption go further. What's your take, guys, on this?
John, do you mind if I jump in first? I have a very strong opinion on this.
Go ahead, yeah.
So right now, if you look at cryptocurrency or blockchain adoption, we're actually getting a lot of the big financial institutions adopting it, right? Like, you know, there's a reserve for, you know, Bitcoin being, you know, 1% or 0.5% of your portfolio. Like, that is now we're seeing to becoming a norm. However, outside of the financial industry, let's say, you know, in the fashion industry, the adoption is still very, very minimal. And personally, I believe the biggest hurdle is that people just don't get this technology. It's very, like, you can't see it. It's like the internet, you know, it's something that's there. Until people can realistically touch it, you know, download an app and just start playing around with it, it's going to be very difficult for the mainstream adoption. And this is actually why I'm working on this NFT project, is because we want to build a very simple platform for people to just sign in with their email, and you can start looking at different assets, different digital assets that's on a blockchain without needing to understand like what goes on behind the scene. Like, I think this is really the biggest hurdle. You gotta have a very user-friendly, you know, interface. People go in, they kind of get it right away. Okay, I know how to work this. You know, I know where this button means. I know how to, you know, pay with my credit card. I don't have any cryptocurrency, but I want to buy this. I think it's fun. Let me just, you know, sign in with my email and pay with credit card. And I haven't found any applications out here on the market that allows, you know, the mainstream users to do that. And that's why we're building it from ground zero. So to me, you know, to answer your question, the biggest hurdle is how do we make the user interface so easy for people to just intuitively get? So that's from my take.
Yeah, no, and that's a great point, is people want it to be easy. They want to just use their fingerprint and be able to pay like Google Pay and things like that. So I think the adoption is going to come once these, like, for example, right now, you can't even buy crypto with your Visa card or MasterCard. You can't, at least in Canada, they blocked it. So like those hurdles need to be overcome before there's a lot more adoption. I know you can still buy crypto with Interact, but it takes a couple days and it's not always. So it needs to be as easy as, like Maggie said, as it is with paying with your email or with your credit card and things like that. So that it's going to be good. But as far as adoption for the technology for the authentication or authenticity of things, I know that some of the luxury brands like Louis Vuitton, Cartier, and Prada, I know that they're working on some sort of blockchain technology to tackle counterfeit goods. But again, very infant. I think it was just announced this year. So the adoption from the manufacturer perspective is also taking a long time because, like Maggie said, because of they don't understand the technology. And the other part to it could be too, and Maggie, feel free to correct me, is that they don't understand how to integrate that technology into their manufacturing processes. So a good idea for someone could be a blockchain consultant for those types of companies. So if someone wants to start a company doing that. That's essentially what they need, is they need someone who can bridge that gap between, okay, here's what you're doing from a manufacturing perspective, and here's how you can integrate this technology to ensure authenticity.
Okay, that's interesting. So here's a hard question for you, John. Because it's more like around the shred aspect. So imagine what are the uncertainties, like, you know, for the integration perspective that could be faced, for instance, in industries around fashion, in blockchain, and maybe that they have to face, for instance, this kind of integration.
Yeah, that's a great question. So there might not be, there's a potential for there not to be any shred, because if they're integrating a known technology like an IoT device, and they're not building it themselves, and they're using it in the way it was intended to be used, and I like to talk about it, start with it this way, but if they're using it in the way it was intended to be used, there's likely not going to be any shred. Where the shred eligibility comes in is, and same with blockchain technology, for example, like if you're just building including another Ethereum token, there's no shred there because it's very straightforward. There's lots of resources out there on how to do that. It's where you're going beyond the standard practice. So to be honest, I can't really give you an example in the manufacturing space because I haven't been able to think of something yet. I haven't run into that yet. I could probably guesstimate, like, if they're building their own, like, nano tracker to go into these devices or something like that, that could be where, if they're building their own devices, there's likely more shred eligibility there to do the traceability or the authenticity. But it's really difficult because this is all new technology. This is a whole new kind of realm. But at the same time, depending on how they approach it, there might not be shred eligibility, even though it's kind of innovative, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but that's funny because from an external perspective, when you don't really understand, like, shred, but with this insight, seems like the barriers to have this integration are lower than we could think, right? So because you don't have to go through that kind of rework process that really shred needs. It's really about a mindset of wanting to integrate that and seeing the value, like Maggie, you said.
But just before we move on, I want to make sure that we're all on the same level here as far as for people that don't understand shred. When it comes to shred in Canada, there's 5 questions that you have to answer to be eligible. It's a compliance more program. But if we could sum it so we're all talking about this, so that we're all understanding what shred is for those listening as well, is that you have a problem with the technology itself that you're uncertain that you could resolve that problem. And the solution to that problem, or solutions, go beyond standard practice, go beyond standard engineering, go beyond standard programming or development. And that's why when I was talking about just using technology in the way it was intended to be used, typically there's no shred there. It's about innovation. It's about expanding your knowledge and advancing your knowledge. So, sorry, I just wanted to make sure we're all on the same plane.
Thank you, John. It's always good to remind us that.
I also want to jump in. So I think, you know, in terms of the technology for the fashion industry to adopt blockchain, yes, I think a lot of the technology is already there. And like you said, Alex, a lot of it is the mindset. It's about, you know, like, kind of seeing this as the greatest opportunity of our generation. You know, we already passed the internet, right? That was the 1990s. Someone get in there, like, you know, they'll probably be doing really well right now. I think blockchain is the opportunity of this generation. And, you know, it's that mindset. Yeah. Someone is seeing that and they're like, okay, I want to be the first in my industry to go and adopt it. So that's the first thing. Second thing, and similar to what John is saying, is to have a consultant or have someone who has the know-hows in the industry to then show you what are all the tools, what are all the platforms already out there so that you can partner up with them. You don't have to reinvent the wheel and, you know, build a wallet, you know, build a transaction platform, build a user interface. You don't have to do all that. You just have to kind of understand who are the partners that are already existing, I can partner up with them, what the business model can be for my specific industry. And, you know, you would know your industry the best, the revenue model, how the customers engage. So it's about just putting together these pieces. So, yeah, so the mindset and also the know-hows in the industry, I think those are the 2 things that will help with mainstream adoption for this technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to follow up on that, because basically, initially, you know, when we think of blockchain, we, generally speaking, the general population, we think of, you know, I'm part of this general population. I think of cryptocurrency, right? So what could, like, other industries, for instance, can take from the financial industry, like, what learn from those financial industry, for instance? Why suddenly, like, financial industry, you have like people who are conservative, but also like, you know, risk takers. But now you have like the bigger financial institutions who are investing one portion of their portfolio into blockchain, into cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. So they are investing into the unknown beyond standard practice. Do you reuse some shred wording here? What can, for instance, other industry learn from that practice? Is it like also part of the mindset? Like, you know, take some risks, or is there anything else in the process that, from your perspective, you've seen that the financial industry understood that the other industries could, you know,
also learn, right? Yeah. Okay. So yeah. I think it's a very natural progression. Like, we see the financial institutions, you know, having Bitcoin as part of their portfolio. They're doing it not from a, you know, I want to use the Bitcoin a certain way. They're doing it more as a value, right? Like a storage of value. So it's more from the investment aspect for the financial industry. For the other industry, it's a little bit different. So for example, right now, there's a term called DeFi, D-E-F-I, which stands for decentralized finance. That is very different from using Bitcoin as, you know, a storage of value. DeFi is basically saying, you know, two individuals across the world can now engage in lending transactions or other transactions with each other. So they're building on a use case. So now it's not just an investment play. They're actually using cryptocurrency in a way that, you know, serves real world value. So how do we learn from that? So one example is, for example, in the music industry, ticketing. Ticketing right now is, you know, I will go on Ticketmaster, I will buy a ticket, I will go to, you know, a music concert or, you know, like a baseball game. And then after the game, you know, that's it, right? So that's the current way of doing it. If we now say the tickets can be used as an NFT, and for the user, everything's still the same. You download the app, you purchase a ticket with your credit card. It's just that now the ticket is sitting in your wallet and you now have a copy of it in your wallet, basically forever. And what that does is it now builds into your social identity. If you're a hardcore baseball fan, or Alex, in your case, you know, if you buy this shoe, this limited edition shoe, and you want to show it off to your friends, you know, like, hey, I own this, that's pretty cool. You can now showcase that in your wallet because this thing is going to live there forever versus a ticket. You buy on Ticketmaster, next year if you want to look for it and show someone, you're going to look through like thousands of emails to look for that ticket, and it doesn't look pretty. You know what I mean? So yeah. Like, this is now like having this record to now store all your different, you know, events, tickets, sportings, music concerts, you know, like your lending transactions with someone across the world. Basically having one place to store all your different transactions is going to build into your identity. And especially as everything's becoming more digital, our digital identity is so important. And I think this technology will really help us to build that out more. And so for any industry that's adopting it, this is a huge play also. You know, how do they integrate this technology into, you know, ticketing or music or restaurant, you know, season pass? Really, like, it, the sky's the limit in terms of what this can do. But, like, how do they integrate it in a way where, you know, for their users, consumers, buyers, it makes sense for them to, you know, buy this NFT, buy this technology, buy this ticket, and then always having it.
Yeah, and Maggie, just for people who are listening in, you kind of touched on what NFT is without kind of touching on what NFT is. Do you want to kind of link that so that people understand what an NFT is and relate it to the ticketing?
Yes, thank you, John. Yes. So NFT is it's a cryptocurrency. It's a very specific type of cryptocurrency. The full name is non-fungible token. You really don't need to know what that means. It's just a mouthful. Basically, it's just a cryptocurrency that represents something. So it can represent, you know, a picture, a video, a ticket, a season pass to Wonderland. Like, all these different items can be represented by NFT. When you say something is represented by NFT, what it means that, first of all, it is on a blockchain. It's a cryptocurrency, right? Therefore, it's on a blockchain. And secondly, you can actually set how many copies of that thing there is. So for example, I'm an artist, you know, I created this Mona Lisa, okay? Let's say I'm Da Vinci. I created Mona Lisa, I'm super proud of it. I say, okay, there can only be 10 rightful copies of this Mona Lisa ever in existence, okay? For me to do that in the current world is impossible, right? If I make it digital, you know, anyone can screenshot it. It's impossible for me to say, you know, there's only 10 copies of it. But that is now available on the blockchain. I can say, you know, for me to upload this picture, I click and I say, okay, there's only 10 copies of that. I put it in the column. And boom, I create it on a blockchain. And there's a lot of platforms that can help you to do that. Our platform can help you to do that, but there's a lot of other ones out there. And basically, you're saying there's now ever 10 copies of this art in existence. So what that means is it's now saying there's limited supply, which means there's now a value to your digital work. And that is very important because now people will want to own a copy. Let's say someone's a big fan of yours. They now want to own a copy of this because they know as you, the artist, becoming more successful, your work is going to be more, you know, valuable. And if they buy a copy now, they're basically, you know, buying something that's valuable. So yeah, so this is what NFT means. It's just a digital representation of something. And it can apply to, for example, the ticketing industry is, me, you know, I'm a DJ, I have 5,000 tickets to my concert, I can say, you know, I can have 500 of them as NFTs, and I can sell them, and I can actually embed in them some perks. Let's say, you know, the 500 people, the lucky people, can have front row seats to my concert. You know, that can be a real thing that you can now put in a QR code. So when you go to the ticketing booth, you know, the person will look at it and be like, oh, you know what, you're one of that 500 lucky people. Let me take you to the front row. It now has a really cool meaning behind it. And so, yeah, so this is what this technology offers. It's just a digital representation of something, and you can put a quantity around it. You give it like that limited supply effect, and basically, you know, you make it more valuable because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's interesting because recently I've seen also memes, you know, taking some values like work of art, and some of them kind of like pulled out of the internet and like getting value. Like which one was like the girl like, you know, smirking at a burning house something, and mm-hmm. Or like that kind of meme. I was wondering how would that work, like, you know, how would that work technically? Like, would it be like kind of like a virtual showroom to show those, show those work of art? Like, you know, when you imagine that in the physical world, you mentioned the Mona Lisa. So now it's at the Louvre right now. So there's nowhere else you can go see it, right? And so how would that work in the digital world? There's 10 copies for like a modern Mona Lisa that you have drawn or created. How would that work? How do you picture that to work so that people come to see it or like draw traffic into it? How would be potential business models around it?
So Alex, that's a great question. And I think, you know, you're basically asking if someone after they buy this NFT, how do they showcase it, right? Like what's the use case afterwards? So right now there's two ways that's pretty popular in the industry. One is there's actually art galleries popping up now with big empty TV screens. And they will show the NFT on those big TV screens. So they can change it out as they want. And when you look at this big TV screen, there's a little QR code beside it. You scan it with your phone, and it actually takes you to, you know, wherever the marketplace is. And it says that, well, hey, you know, there's only 10 copies of this NFT. Like, it actually proves your ownership of this NFT as you're showcasing it. And because it's on this big TV screen that, you know, we can, let's say we take a Samsung TV, for example. Shout out to Samsung TV. But, you know, like they make work of art. They actually make a digital piece look like an actual art. Like they do a really good job with dimming the contrast, just that. So imagine an art gallery filled with Samsung TVs and then you're showing different NFTs on it. And the thing that's cool about NFT is it's animated. This thing moves. This Mona Lisa is actually like sipping a coffee or, you know, reading a newspaper. Like, it's really cool. It's a modern way of twisting on it. It's animated, right? You can even go cooler where, you know, you can have two TV screens side by side and the two NFTs can interact with each other. You know, the Mona Lisa might be handing a newspaper to the Mona Lisa beside her. Like, there's a lot of cool ways to play with this. And I think this is, you know, this new industry that's coming out. You know, art galleries aren't just about paintings anymore. It is now living art.
Yeah.
Living art that lives in and breathes, and you can track ownership, and it still looks like a real physical digital art. So that's one example, you know, the art gallery piece.
Okay.
And then the second use case is on our phone, like literally just on our phone. So there are platforms out there that will allow the user to showcase this is the gallery of the NFTs mm-hmm. I've already collected. So for example, our platform, the name is Metaspace. We allow the user, after they collect it, to basically host it on their profile page. Think about, Instagram or Facebook. You have a cool picture, you put it on your profile page. It's the same concept. It's just that picture is now an NFT, right? Like, so you can showcase it on your profile. Anyone that comes to you, your profile will say, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, Alex, you just bought this. I love that piece. I love that, you know, special edition shoe that you just purchased. So there's another way, and that's just so much easier. Like, everyone has a phone. Everyone's on their phone. You know, that's why we build it as a mobile app, because everyone is on their phone. Like, that's the thing we use the most. And if you want to showcase it to anyone, you just kind of grab it. So those are the two use cases right now.
And to kind of take that back to what current technology is, or historically what's been done with art, is you're looking at paper ledgers that have been kept, and you've got to bring in these people to authenticate, and there's a whole process to do this, to authenticate art, and even then it can be faked. This kind of eliminates, well, so far, could eliminate all of that, and it brings back traceability and authenticity and the history of it. So even if you sell it to someone else, it'll trace back, because of the blockchain ledger, it'll trace back to the original person who made that NFT, as opposed to a work of art where anyone, like, you could repaint it, or you could reproduce a famous piece of art.
So John, like, thank you for bringing that point, because, like, this is something that I'm actually very passionate about. Like, how do we give more control and more power to the artist? You know, like, right now, like you said, there's so many middlemen in between. There's the authentication party, there's the art gallery, there's the agent, and everyone is taking a cut every step along the way. So for the end artist, they may only get, you know, 10%, 20% of their sale proceeds, which isn't a lot for someone who spent all that time creating the art. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with this new technology, the artist is basically engaging with the buyer directly. You're cutting out all those other middlemen. And if there is someone who, for example, helps you with marketing, you can give them a cut. But it's about artists having the control to say, okay, you know, I want to give you 10% of this sales proceeds, but I would take the remaining 90% or 80%. So it's about giving them the power. And also, it's, you know, another thing we haven't talked about is, this is also recurring, continuous revenue. It's not just a one-off transaction. The artist is getting a cut on every single future sale of this piece also, right? Like, that is huge. You're basically reinventing a whole business model for the artist, or for the music artist here. Like, if you create something, you're getting continuous revenue, you have more incentive to create it. And so we're encouraging people to be more creative, to live out your creative realm, because they now have more incentive to do it.
Could we call this art as a service?
Yeah.
Little tech fun here, unintended, but actually intended. But yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting, because I was following the sale of, like, of a piece of art sold to a Middle East prince, a Da Vinci, you know, kind of like may have been painted by Da Vinci, may not have been painted by Da Vinci. It went for sale for like hundreds of millions of dollars, I think $500 million US. So that was some kind of controversy around it. Was it actually painted by Da Vinci or just drawn by pencil? So, you know, imagine down the line, you know, a few hundred years later, you have someone really famous right now painting it, and suddenly this couldn't happen anymore. This kind of conversation couldn't happen anymore. That's interesting. That's one topic I wanted to come back, and it was like a little thing that you mentioned, John. It was about they didn't let it happen on the transaction, on the card, on the buying cryptocurrency. I was wondering, what do you mean by they? Is it like the government? Is it the financial institution? Or like, what does it mean?
To be honest, I don't know if it's the financial institution or if it's the credit card companies. And Maggie might have more insight into this. But I know in Canada, at least, there's TD, my TD Visa, and then I have a MasterCard as well. They will not allow any purchases of cryptocurrency on any of the exchanges. And Megan might have better insight into if it's the actual, if it's Visa and MasterCard or if it's the actual banks that are blocking it. But it wouldn't make sense that it's the banks because you can still do interact e-transfers. So I'm guessing it's the credit card companies. I would have to do more research, but that's a good question. I don't know if Megan is.
So my understanding is, this thing has evolved a little bit also. A few years ago, if you're a cryptocurrency company, you can't even open a bank account at one of the major four banks. Like, they're just like, I don't understand your business. You might be, you know, doing money laundry. I don't want to give you a bank account. That has changed, okay? Nowadays, yes, you can have a bank account. And yes, you can purchase crypto with your, you know, Interact transfer or your bank a card. A credit card, my understanding is some credit cards are supported in Canada for the purchase of cryptocurrency, but we really make it difficult for people to do it. Like you have to, you know, there's something called KYC. You have to upload your passport. You have to basically identify yourself before you can even purchase. And even then, there's a weekly limit of, I forgot, it's like $5,000 or $10,000 that you can purchase. So, you know, like, let's say the Bitcoin drops one day to like $10,000. Everyone's like, oh my God, this is such a good opportunity. You can't even buy more than the weekly limit. So there is that regulation around it. And, you know, this is like opening up a whole can of worms. Like, on the regulation side, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of factors that the regulators are thinking. You know, we've got to protect the Canadians, all this. But, you know, like just going back to John's point, like it is not the easiest right now for Canadians to get their hands on cryptocurrency. And this is why I think for services, so there are global services that have the bank license. And basically, they just make it very easy for anyone to use their credit card and just buy directly whatever good they want to without having need to, you know, have cryptocurrency for the middle process. So yeah, so I think those type of technology will help Canadians to adopt this better.
Yeah, and Maggie, you brought up another key definition to talk about, and that's KYC and these exchanges and know your client. Did you want to kind of explain to what KYC means in the crypto world?
Sure. Okay, so KYC just stands for Know Your Client. And it's really a regulation that was put in place because of the money laundering concerns. So another very important term is called AML. It often goes hand in hand with KYC. So next time you hear about AML, it just means anti-money laundering. And so the two basically means that, you know, for people who, you know, criminal records or other activities who might potentially use cryptocurrency for money laundering purposes, the government want to make sure that, you know, for every single financial institution that's dealing with cryptocurrency, they know who their clients are. And if there is money coming in, you know, it's traceable to the individual. And also for tax purposes, right? Like they, of course, want to know if you're making money off cryptocurrency, you know, the government wants a cut also. So for all those reasons, there is that regulation in place. And so for anyone who wants to purchase cryptocurrency, in Canada at least, you have to go through KYC, which just means you upload your passport or your driver license. You actually have to take a picture with your passport beside you, kind of, you know, show your face, matches. And then the financial institutions will open your account and then you can purchase your cryptocurrency afterwards.
Yeah, I'm actually going through one on geek.io right now where you have to upload your driver's license, but also you have to hold your geek.io ID and your driver's license and take a picture and get it uploaded. And so it's quite difficult. And I don't know, maybe if you want to kind of talk about Binance and how they're banned in Ontario because they refuse to register as a regulated exchange with the Ontario Securities Commission. I think they're also banned in the UK as well because of this. Is that around KYC or is that around something else or do you know much about that?
So to tell the truth, I'm not an expert on this. My knowledge is that, yeah, so for any, you know, exchange, like any financial services, you need a special regulated license to operate in Canada. And Binance is a very interesting example. Like Binance is actually the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the world right now. But what they did is they've operated out of jurisdictions that are a lot more crypto friendly. So Malta, for example, right? Malta is a country. So because they're able to get away with a lot of regulations, they just never really took the time to do things by the regulation. And there's pro and cons to that. You know, like for someone in the industry, I applaud to them to be able to move fast because they're able to break a lot of grounds. But at the same time, you know, for someone who's more like cautious, especially as a financial side, you know, this is our money. Like you want someone who's protected and regulated. You know, they're not really in that route. And so we have other exchanges, marketplaces that's supported in Ontario that will allow people to have that peace of mind to say that they are regulated. Because one example is Quadriga. Like Quadriga actually, you know, went down pretty badly 2 years ago. And that's a great example of saying, you know, you can buy your cryptocurrency on an exchange and actually lose your money as a result, right? So that is a little bit scary. But, you know, rest assured, the exchanges we're dealing with right now are heavily regulated. We're not going to see another case of Quadriga. But that's just a good warning sign of, you know, that could potentially go that way. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and we've got a couple of good ones in Canada. Shout out to CoinSquare. I know they're one of the larger exchanges here in Canada. I think we lost our moderator, but maybe while we're waiting for him to come back, maybe this is a good chance for you to talk to us about Axis and what you guys do, and what you're developing and things like, and it's your chance to share.
Sure. Right? Yeah. Okay. So we're actually rebranding. So the product is called MetaSpace. So Meta is kind of like this new world. You know, metaverse is a term. So meta space, it's a space for people, especially creative people, to come and get inspirations and share their work. And it's really taking on a social media play because we want to make sure that this is not just a one-off transaction between a creator and their audience. We want this to be an ongoing conversation. You know, artists, music artists, fashion brands, really, like, this is an ongoing conversation with their community. You know, when they have a piece of digital art or a campaign that's really beautiful, they want to showcase it. And people should have the ability to like it, share it, comment on it, start a conversation around it, but also the ability to purchase it right there in the app and then to have it on their profile. So now, you know, it shows that they care about this brand or that they support this movement, whatever that movement is. So that's the platform we're building. It's going to be a mobile app. It's actually coming out next month in case of the version 2, which is very exciting. And yeah, it's basically a place where people can just log in with your email and you're able to follow other brands or other artists that you're interested in, see their work, which is basically, you know, it's just a picture or a music track or a video, but it's actually an NFT. So for the user, you don't have to really understand the NFT part. All you have to know is that you're able to follow people, you're able to see their work and like it, comment on it. And then if you like it, you can buy it with your credit card and it will just showcase it on your profile. So it's very easy transaction. And that's really the whole goal. Like I said, like, I'm just really here to facilitate this technology, you know, build a product that makes it very easy for the everyday person to use it and really to see where it goes afterwards.
And can people download your app now, Maggie, or is it going to be released in a month?
So it's going to be released in a month, but we are, we are collecting emails. So if anyone is interested, maybe they can shoot an email to you, John. I don't know how people can leave their emails to a podcast. So we're actually doing, because of our rebranding, we're working on the website right now, which is why, like, otherwise on a website, we would have a place for people to leave their emails. But yeah, so, I mean, it's called Meta.
Please include my email.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sorry, Alex, when you left me, I gave her an opportunity to talk about her transition from Axis to Metaspace and talk about what they're developing. So I thought it was a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time. And talking about facilitation, like you're facilitating the adoption in the process. So that's where I wanted to jump in. And, you know, we've seen that. Is there any other facilitators? Like, I'm thinking of one simply because. That I look at the news, I follow some of the trends on certain industries, and you know, we talk about briefly about the regulators on how it can protect the Canadians, but also what could potentially the regulators do to increase adoption in other industries who are not. The reason I'm thinking this, for instance, there's an opioid crisis, right? And in North America. So basically, one of the source, like one of the reason of this crisis is people like, you know, those who are like unfortunately addicted to certain substances are importing or like using illegally imported products from other countries who are not like, you know, who are fabricated, manufactured in not the best conditions and ODing on it, right? So what could the government do or regulators do to, for instance, have the pharma industry adopting these kind of things or other industries in this mindset? Like, you know, you're protecting the people, like your job as a government when you're, you know, when you're a federal organization is to protect the people. So is there any kind of thing that could be done from the governmental perspective to have like certain industries and any industries in particular? I was thinking about the pharma, but any other industry that could be applicable and facilitate, like what could be done for it?
So that's a great question. So it's always interesting, right, to kind of like see this from the regulator's perspective. Because yes, you're right. Like as the government, it is their job to protect the public, make sure people don't lose their money. Like that's very important. But at the same time, they also want to make sure that they're not falling behind. Like too much protection just means that for the entrepreneurs, it's almost impossible to do anything because you need approval on every single level. And so, you know, the entrepreneurs, if that's the case, would just move to another jurisdiction that has better, you know, more friendlier regulations. And that just means that the country is going to fall behind on the technology advances. So I think the government is very much aware of the two extremes. And so it's very difficult for them to, you know, have any regulation around this just because it's so new. So, you know, like we touched briefly on the security aspect. So yes, a lot of the cryptocurrency can be classified as a security. And if that's the case, it just means that, you know, whoever that's building the platform or facilitating it needs a special license, needs a regulated securities license to even operate this. So that's one aspect. Another very interesting legal concern is the intellectual property rights, especially in the NFT space. Like Alex, I think you briefly touched on as well. Like people can just take something off the internet and basically create it as an NFT, right? Like there's nothing stopping anyone from doing it. And so there's a lot of intellectual property rights discussions now around how do we regulate this? And that's a very difficult question. So I think some of the ways that, because the technology is moving so fast every day, and I've talked to some interesting companies that are now working on this, and basically what they're doing is they put certain focus on the brands or the artist, and they say, okay, you have been authenticated as the artist. So for example, using Da Vinci as an example, if Da Vinci is live today and let's say, you know, our platform authenticated Da Vinci, he is who he says he is, you know, we check his ID, yada, yada. Now he has a check mark on our marketplace and anything he produces will be authenticated, can be traced back to him. Okay. And let's say someone else takes his copy and puts it on our marketplace and say, oh, you know, this is my NFT. We can actually say, no, that is not the case. We have this blue check mark and it is not traced back to Da Vinci. So that's one way to be able to potentially fight a lot of forgery around this. But this is such a new industry. And I think, yes, definitely a lot of IP lawyers are looking into it right now. But to my knowledge, there hasn't been any one case around this yet, just because it's so new and people are still trying to figure their stuff out.
Yeah, I think that, and Alex, I think you know about this story. There was a story about, I think it was kick. And they were trying. There was an issue with their they were trying to introduce a token, but because of the way the token was historically being used, they couldn't use it in the way that they wanted to because it was already being used in a certain way. So there's a real world example of them. And I think right now, just to kind of go on what Maggie's saying, right now I think the government is trying to be even more cautious than they should, and rightfully so, because at the end of the day, they're trying to protect the taxpayers and things like that. And it goes back to it's a new technology. It's brand new, and there's been issues in the past, like crypto exchanges going down, billions of dollars being lost. So rightfully so, and all these ICOs that were fraudulent. So there's a lot of history that is fraudulent when it comes to this. But there's also a lot of unknowns, and I think that's what's scary too. But as far as trying to get or to increase adoption, it's more about communicating with people, communicating what the government's doing, communicating what they're planning on doing, letting people know, because that will help the people to plan. But again, it's very difficult because it's such a new technology. It's always changing. There's always new things coming and new things being introduced. So it's
yeah. Tough. So another difficult question for you guys, a little curveball. So where do you think Canada is positioning in terms of globally speaking, in terms of adoption of the tech?
I want to touch on the last point John made first, which is related to this question.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of education that is needed for the government also.
Yeah.
Just like how for the public, you know, okay, we're trying to get our brain kind of wrapped around, like, you know, this NFT, this digital representation, like, what do you mean this digital work can have a limited supply? Like, it's actually a pretty difficult concept to wrap our brain around, right? Because that's not the model right now. Same with government. And, you know, I think because of that constant education that is needed, we're kind of seeing a slower progress. And so back to your question, Alex, my take is Canada in a lot of realm is really looking at the U.S. for how they're regulating cryptocurrency.
Okay.
And, you know, again, rightfully so, we're doing that for a lot of other industries also. But in terms of some jurisdictions that's more crypto forward, Singapore is probably the best example. Singapore, Switzerland, and Malta are probably the three places right now that a lot of crypto companies are migrating to, just because they have a much clearer definition of what is possible, what is not allowed, and they're much more friendly to see what this technology is and just encouraging entrepreneurs to try. And because that's really, like, if you look at any new technology, you know, the internet back in the 1990s, the big bubble, right? Like the dot-com bubble. How many companies really, you know, went bankrupt out of that? But look at where we became, like the phoenix that, you know, rise from the ashes. The world we're in today is because of that dot-com bubble. And same was when AI first came out. Like, you're going to see a lot of people, you know, saying, oh my gosh, we're going to be controlled by robots. Like, this is going to be end of human revolution. Like, there's always going to be these big bubbles or these critics or these uncertainties when a new technology comes out, and that's the phase we're in today. But at the same time, because it's so new, there's so much opportunity that's also here. And so for anyone who's listening, who's interested, I highly encourage you just kind of like dive into it a little bit, see how it can relate to your industry, because there's so much opportunity. I really see this as the biggest opportunity of our generation, this whole blockchain and decentralized technology, and really applies to anything. So, sorry, that's a very long question to your answer, but yeah, basically,
so please, John, go for it.
I'm gonna add something to it, and this is my own personal opinion, and it could be completely wrong, but at the end of the day, I don't think it matters how far Canada is in adoption, and that's what blockchain, that's the beauty about blockchain, is because blockchain is not dependent on us, on one country. It's not dependent on one institution. It's not dependent on one overarching regulated body, because at the end of the day, I can go and buy any crypto that I want as long as I know how to do it. And same with anyone. And you can do whatever you want with blockchain regardless of the regulations. So at the end of the day, I don't think it matters. For a lot of people, it's going to matter because they want that security. But at the end of the day, that's the beauty of blockchain, is it's decentralized. It's not dependent on nations. It's not dependent on countries adopting it. That's the beauty of it, is that it's built by the people for the
government.
Yeah. I know that's what it is. It's there, like, it's going to enable so many good things. It's going to enable people in third world countries to have bank accounts, to have digital assets, without all these big bank transfer fees and people to transfer money back home without these big bank transfer fees. And that's because it's a decentralized platform that can be used by anyone.
And sorry, John,
that's my rant.
I want to touch on one point that John made, the third world countries. I feel like, you know, on the topic of regulation, if, let's say, for some reason, Canada becomes so heavily regulated that none of the entrepreneurs can even survive here, we're going to see these third world countries adopting blockchain faster than we do, which is scary. And they're, in a way, they already do. Like, you know, people have a cell phone there, and people are sending money from one cell phone to another, like basically just typing someone's, you know, wallet address in, they're sending money that way, instead of going through a bank institution, which might take a few days for your money to settle, right? Like, that is an instant transfer. And we're already seeing that in several countries, and we don't have it yet. So I think it's a very interesting, you know, like if you look at this globally, right, like outside of Canada, how the world is adopting this technology, like sometimes we are playing a catch-up because of the regulations. So it really is a fine line between the two. And like John said, this technology is going nowhere because it's global. Even if, let's say, the Canadian or the U.S. regulations kills it all, which will not happen because all the big U.S. institutions have Bitcoin, like, this is not going to happen. But let's say for some reason, you know, it kills it all, you're still going to have all these other countries that are supporting this technology, which means that it's still live and people can still engage with it. And whichever country that don't adopt it is going to fall behind. Like, this is the reality. And we've come this far to this reality right now. So let's just embrace the reality. And let's just see how we can get ahead in this reality.
That was great.
Thank you.
I wanted to finish by this little piece because, you know, that was also memes around it. It's about Dogecoin.
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin. So, you know, how was it different between, like, you know, than the other, like, you know, cryptocurrency, like, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum, and why suddenly this picked up? Like, I just want to retouch on that, maybe have your take. Because I was talking to someone yesterday before this podcast, like someone who's not really averse, like, you know, well averse as you guys on blockchain, and he asked me, what's up with this Dogecoin? So, yeah.
Joan, do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
So Dogecoin was created as a joke. It was created as, it's based off of a meme, and to be honest, I don't know how it got so big other than Elon Musk started talking about it. I don't know. And Maggie, you might know more, but I know that Elon Musk got behind it and then it took off. And this is a little warning about cryptocurrency, is it can be volatile, because one tweet from Elon Musk and Bitcoin dropped. One big purchase from Elon Musk and the Bitcoin went up. So, like, it's very volatile. Sorry to kind of defer, but Dogecoin, and anyone nowadays with enough knowledge and know-how and background and learning can create their own crypto. It's not overly difficult, Dogecoin, I know it originated as a joke meme, but I don't know why it took off so much other than Elon Musk getting behind it. Maggie, you might be able to give us some more
insight. Okay, so I don't personally hold any Dogecoin just because of the volatility, and it really started as a joke, right? So there's no like real use case behind it. However, I love the symbol, like what Dogecoin symbolizes. And what I mean by that is, if you look at, you know, Wall Street bets, right? Like for the first time ever, people can actually, like the crowd can gang up and basically fly the Wall Street. Like that's what Wall Street bets, the whole, you know, that whole stock, basically that's what it does. And if you look at Dogecoin, it's the same thing. It just means that, you know, people just by putting in a bit of money here and there can actually accumulate a lot of money that can move the market. And we can actually, you know, go against the big Wall Street or Bay Street guys. And that's a very liberating idea. Like, it's a very interesting idea. I'm not saying, yeah, you know, the Wall Street is evil. Like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's a new movement where, you know, we're giving people another way of doing, like, having a different movement. And that's a very interesting idea to me. And that's what Dogecoin symbolizes. And I think, you know, you sort of need that pump and dump, sort of like what Elon Musk's tweets do. I'm a huge fan of Elon, not so much on his Dogecoin tweets, but on everything else he's doing. Like, it's amazing what he has done for humanity. And, you know, big, big shout out to him. Also, his girlfriend, Grimes. I've been following them on Instagram. They're just fascinating people, like super interesting people. Really opens up the mind. But anyway, going back to Dogecoin, I think, you know, beyond this pump and dump, like what it really means is we have to bring a cryptocurrency or something to a certain level for it to get to the public eye. So, for example, Alex, your friend may not hear about everything else about blockchain, but that Dogecoin, you know, because of how much it pumped, caught his attention, right? And same with that Beeple art, you know, it got sold for $69 million, and all my Bay Street friends are texting me, hey Maggie, what's up with blockchain and NFTs? I just saw this head news. Like, you need that sort of number to get to the public attention. And once you get to their attention, then you can educate people about, okay, like, well, this is what it really means behind the scene. So it does take a certain headline for it to get to people. And I think, you know, I like it for that symbolizing.
And I think at the end of the day, what Dogecoin has helped to do is to create awareness, more awareness around memes, around crypto, around NFT. If anything, it's helped to do that, which is at the end of the day is beneficial for blockchain technology.
Yeah, and you know, we are very coming close to the end this this conversation. And what I really like about, you know, the story is, you know, what I understand, blockchain is about decentralizing, right? And it meant, like, it really came to life and, like, decentralizing the power of finance and, like, you know, and the markets, what Dogecoin. And that's why I wanted to really touch on that. And that's what I was trying to explain with my understanding yesterday to my friend. And, you know, one of the things when I was studying, I was hearing about is this economist Schopenhauer. He was saying, and it was reiterated by a neuroscientist I read, a famous neuroscientist. His name is Idriss Aberkan. He's French. He was basically saying that any disruptive idea goes through three phases. So basically, it's ridiculous, it's dangerous, and then it becomes obvious.
Love that.
But like, no, the reciprocal doesn't work. Like, anything stupid is not disruptive, but any disruptive idea that goes through those three phases. Mm. And, you know, he was using the example of, you know, woman voting at that time. Back then, you know, it was, 1700s, it's, you know, it's silly. In the 1800s, or early 90s, it's dangerous. Who's going to take care of the kids, right? Mm-hmm. And now, 20th century, 21st century, you know,
it's obvious, right? Yeah.
Right? And you see, like, it's silly. It started as a joke. It's kind of dangerous, you know, because the power is just, like, getting decentralized, but you mentioned it, right? So even third world countries are using it. It becomes obvious. Everybody is like, you know, and that's what I like about blockchain and what enables, right?
Yeah, and just one last thing to touch on. For those that are new to crypto or worried about crypto or scared, there are cryptos that you can buy that are linked to actual currencies, like the U.S. currency, like the Canadian dollar, so they're not as volatile as other cryptos. So for those who are looking to invest, you can look for those kinds of cryptos if you want, invest in those.
Just building on John's point, there's actually TFSAs and RSP accounts that you can now purchase Bitcoin in, so you don't even need a wallet. Yeah! Oh, you guys don't know this.
Really?
Okay, wow.
I'm gonna look at my bank after this.
One of my favorite Canadian fintech institutions. Wealthsimple. So they actually enable Bitcoin funds to be purchased inside your RSP and TFSA account. I believe it is called, just give me one second. I think it's called BTCC, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. BTCC.B is the ticker. And basically you can purchase it. It's just a fund. So they would actually buy the Bitcoin on your behalf. When you buy the fund, the price of the fund will just go up and down, basically pursuant to the Bitcoin prices. And that's the easiest way to get your hands. If you want to diversify your portfolio a little bit, you know, if you see the long-term growth of this asset class, then yeah, that is one good way to go about it.
And just one last shout out before we end is I just wanted to give a shout out to the Crypto Chicks who are if we're talking about enabling and helping to educate these women. There are a bunch of women that have just developed they're not for profit and they're helping to educate women in tech in third world countries all over the world. They're a really great organization for not only getting the word out there but educating people as well. So they've created their own courses and a whole bunch of stuff. So it's a very, very amazing organization. And I'm proud to be a mentor for them. So
All right.
I had to give it a shout out.
Thank you, John. Always going above and beyond for us. But yeah, I want to thank you again both today, John, Maggie. I feel already smarter.
That's all Maggie. That's all Maggie. She's a wealth of knowledge. I could talk to her all day.
Yeah. So it was like I didn't see the hour go by. It flew so fast. And you know that wouldn't be enough of an hour to address all the questions I have. Maybe another episode. Who knows? But yeah, thank you so much for your time, guys. It was amazing to have you. I hope everyone enjoyed the conversation and you know where to find us.
Agents of Change, a Latent podcast, does not constitute a recommendation for any organization, product, or service. It's produced and recorded by Blumex.